Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, thank you very much for giving this show a great couple of weeks. The traffic on the internet site has more than doubled lately. I am reaching places that I never thought it would be possible to reach. So many cities in North America with us now. Now, I love America and I love American radio, always have. In fact, as I was growing up, I used to take my cue from the great American broadcasters that I would hear. And I would try and be like them because I believed that they gave passion and dynamism and real goodness to their delivery. And those were the people I tried to be like. And of course, I've got a British accent. Yeah, I can't avoid that. I'm sometimes accused of being mid-Atlantic. But I love that. I even used to stay up at my parents' home until 3 o'clock in the morning and try to hear, and did on many occasions, through the crackle and the static, 77 WABC out of New York City. And I got very recently the chance to visit that station. And I actually sat behind the great Sean Hannity as he was on air across America, and it was just an incredible experience to visit that radio station that I had revered as a boy when it was a music station. And then as I got interested in talk radio, well, WABC, the powerhouse, became a talk radio station. And that is one of the great places that inspired me. One of many, in fact, radio stations like Kogo down in San Diego. And I see that this show has listeners in San Diego, my favorite city in the world, and I hope to return there soon. But it gives me a real buzz to think that there are people right across the USA and all across the world listening to this show. And of course, across the UK, which is the heartland of this show. This show comes out of London and reaches the UK and then spreads its tentacles across the Atlantic, right across, and even to Hawaii, and then down to New Zealand. Listeners in Wellington and Auckland in New Zealand, thank you very much. And then off to Australia, where there are listeners in Adelaide and Canberra and Perth and Sydney and Hobart, Tasmania, and up in Cairns as well. It's nice to have you there. And I'm glad to be providing you with a service here at The Unexplained, and I'm glad that you like it. Now, Major Ed Dames, I think, has been part of the increasing traffic on this website over the last 2 weeks or so. He was the last guest on the show. And of course, Major Ed Dames is, as we say, a very controversial guest. He is a remote viewer. And I think a lot of you don't hold with remote viewing, but a lot of you do. So he polarizes the audience, which is great. That means I've had a lot of email traffic saying, why do you have Ed Dames on this show? He goes on the air in North America and we don't like him. And a lot of traffic saying, Ed Dames is a fascinating guest. So you pays your money, or don't, as the case may be. This still being a free podcast, and you takes your choice. But Ed Dames, I still have to hear from about a couple of the things that he said on the show, whether they have come to pass. And Ed, I'm looking forward to hearing from you. And when Ed tells me something about them, I will tell you. But one thing Ed has been consistent about over the years that he and I have talked on radio and on the internet, he has talked about global financial crisis. Now, he was talking about global financial crisis when it was not fashionable, when New York stockbrokers were making small fortunes, and so were the ones in London and Japan and everywhere else, when property prices in the UK were absolutely escalating at phenomenal rates that we could never have predicted. My little apartment is now worth four times as much as it was. But the way things are going here in the UK right now, it's going to be worth 3.5 times as much as when I bought it. That's what's happening to property prices here. And here in the UK, certainly, where we don't have as big a rental sector as they do in other countries, the value of property, bricks and mortar, determines everything. So it just makes me, well, I don't know whether it can make me laugh because it's not good news, but front page of our London evening paper here last night, the night before I recorded this show, and I'm just getting it out here. Bank chief, recession is a real risk. The bank chief is Mervyn King, the governor of the Bank of England. And all our politicians, from Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister, downwards, have tried to do really nifty footwork lately, saying, oh, no, it's not going to be a recession. We're going to be okay. That's a terrible impression of Gordon Brown, but they look as if they've been wrong. Or perhaps being a little economical with the truth, as we say here. Because by some of the indicators, we may well be heading for recession. And that is a worry for everybody, because the R word is a word that people don't like. Now, to the website, traffic's been excellent. I get the impression that many more people are downloading the show from other sources like iTunes, and we have a new way of getting the show to via feed burner, than are going to the website. So please, I ask you now, if you're listening to this show on your iPod, on the way to work, or on the beach, or wherever you happen to be, and I've had emails from people telling me they do all of those things, and it's a nice thought when I think of you lying on the beach listening to the show while I'm here in London, please go to the website, www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv, and put a hit on the website and send me, please, an email. Let me know that you're there. I've had great email response over this last month or so, and I'm grateful for all of the suggestions and ideas about the show. The direct email address is unexplainedhh@yahoo.co.uk. That's unexplainedhh@yahoo.co.uk, and I do check that email very, very regularly. I think that's all the housekeeping we need to do for this time round, so I'm very excited to get to the guest this time, who is somebody I've talked to on The Unexplained before. Her name is Jackie Newcombe, and Jackie Newcombe is in the English Midlands, and she's an expert on angels. She calls herself the Angel Lady, and she has a new book coming out, but not yet. I don't think it's out until October. We'll check that with her. The book is about angel kids. Children born with special powers. If you look on the internet, a lot of people are talking about that now. This book, says Jackie, is going to cause a lot of raised eyebrows around the world. It's called, as I say, Angel Kids, and we're going to be talking in just a second to Jackie Newcombe about that. But first, something else, and something that is relevant to me. It's my birthday, okay? And birthdays are a time, aren't they, when you look back and you take stock of your life and you think about the things that you've achieved. And I've had a lot of fun in my career and won some awards for what I've done and made some friends around the world, which is nice. And the things that you wish you'd done and some of the things you wish you hadn't done. Oh boy, and for us all, and particularly for me, there are quite a few of those. Taking stock. And I went back through a file of old tapes the other night and found a master tape copy of a documentary I did when I was a student broadcaster more than 20 years ago. For this, I went round the country talking to mediums and people who'd been to seances and experts on mediumship. The programme was called Sight Unseen. Now, as a project, it was never broadcast. It stayed on a shelf. You know, nobody put it on the air anywhere, and I have had it since then. So it is fascinating for me to go back to this programme and listen to people as they were. This is one of the people from that documentary, which I plan to restore and put on this website at some point soon. This lady was a head teacher or a deputy head teacher at a big school in Liverpool. She had a very, very important job, and she was retired at this point more than 20 years ago when we talked. She talked to me at some of the great seances that used to happen in Liverpool in the 1930s and 40s, some of which she went to, and one in particular where they were all sitting round in the circle, the seance started, and a child appeared. This is what she says.
It seemed as though Mrs. French or someone had raised their fist with a pocket handkerchief draped round it like a little personality, but the size of a fist and a forearm, and a handkerchief draped round it. And at the same time, the voice from the trumpet gave a message as though from this personality. We saw that develop to a full-form little boy who purported to be my brother's son, who was stillborn. The clothing was white and had a degree of phosphorescence. This child walked round the circle, and he took my hand, picked it up, and just put, as a child would do, each finger in his mouth. He said, "Oh, Auntie Lola, I loved those forget-me-nots that you put in the vase the other day." Certainly, Mrs. French had no idea that we had put forget-me-nots in a bowl by her photograph on the mantelpiece. Now, that child, I would say, must have seen that to come and mention that. I haven't told this story to many people because they just wouldn't believe it, and therefore I keep to things that people would believe.
Spine-tingling stuff there from another generation, from my documentary that was never broadcast. It was a student project 20-odd years ago called Sight Unseen. And that was the tale of a seance in a room in Liverpool in the very, very early 1940s, so the very beginning of the Second World War, and a medium who became famous locally called Mrs. French. It was all word of mouth in those days. And something happened in that room on that night. Or at least so that lady thinks. There's more where that came from anyway on the documentary. I've got a little bit of restoration to do to the audio. It's a little hissy because a lot of it was done on old reel-to-reel tape or on cassettes. But I'll bring it up to date and I'll put it on the website as soon as I can. Let's get right now to the guest, Jackie Newcombe in Staffordshire, in the English Midlands. She is the Angel Lady and she's on the line now. Jackie, hello.
Hello.
Jackie, oh, it's so good to talk to you. It has been 18 months or 2 years, I think,
since we last met. A long time.
Yeah. We've all changed, Jackie. We're all wiser.
I don't know about that.
Well, we're all older anyway. That's the only thing we can say.
Absolutely.
So how's life and the world of publishing for Hay House, which you do?
Everything's going really well, thank you. I had two books out fairly recently. In fact, one was published with HarperCollins and then the other was with Hay House Publishers. Two completely different books. I'm still writing about angels, but I'm also writing about the afterlife. And I've just completed a book about psychic children's experiences. That's the next thing that I'm doing.
Okay, and that is what we're going to talk about, because I'm quite excited. I think this is going to be the first chat you've done with anybody in the media about the new book.
Yeah, I haven't talked to anybody about it yet.
Well, that's good. You see, we like to be ahead of the game here. In all those years doing news, I like the exclusives. let's talk, first of all, though, for people who've never heard you before, and this show is now reaching people not only in the UK, but in places like America and Australia, New Zealand. Let's just explain how you got involved in angels, and first of all, what are angels?
Ooh, okay. Well, I mean, I had lots of experiences as a child, but didn't really know what they were. One in particular where I found myself in difficulty in the sea and thought I was going to drown and heard a voice which told me that they would help me back to shore or I could drown if I want to. Now, that was a choice that I had at that time.
They gave you the choice to decide whether you wanted to live or die.
I could live or die,
whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's strange, isn't it? So I decided that I wanted to live, clearly, and then very quickly I found myself back on the shore. Now, it would be wrong to say that instantly I was transporting there, and although it would be much more exciting to say that I saw a 10-foot angel or something, sadly I didn't. I know it would have made a better story, but I didn't see something. I just felt and heard this voice. And as soon as I got out of the water, I remember thinking that something strange had happened. I was only about 5. I couldn't explain it. I hadn't seen anything. But I remember rushing at the beach to my mum and saying, "Mummy, Mummy, I nearly drowned." And she said something like, "Oh, yes, but you're fine, dear. Have a sandwich." And we were just about to eat lunch. And it was like the moment had gone. You know, this dramatic moment in my life had passed by.
That is so British, though, that, oh dear, don't worry about it, have a sandwich. Did anybody see you in difficulties and being effectively rescued?
Well, no, I mean, I was sort of, you know, trying to, I'd taken flip-flops with me because it was hot, you know, those sort of rubberized sort of shoes on the beach.
I think actually in America and Australia they call them thongs, you know.
Thongs,
they do call them thongs.
okay. That was just a very British thing to say there. So I've got these things on my feet and I've got my bucket and spade with me. And so I'd walked to the end of the beach. So I was sort of quite a way apart from other people because I was going to leave these things on the sand and I didn't want them stolen. And I do remember sort of waving out, trying to attract somebody's attention, and a man and his son on the shoreline just waving back. So, no, not really. But initially I thought that I was fine. I was just sort of bobbing up and down in the water. But it was, the wind sort of picked up and I found myself being pulled out to sea and then really panicked. So, no, I hadn't been seen. It was strange then to sort of go, you know, back at the beach with the rest of the family, and we've got, you know, those horrible picnics you always have, British picnics as we had at that time. It was far too hot, and we were eating crisps, and they go all oily.
Oh God, do I remember that? And meat paste sandwiches.
Oh, horrendous!
The meat paste would be in little jars, and
that's
sometimes
right.
They'd make the sandwiches on the beach. Spread it. Oh my God!
And you remember why they call them sandwiches, don't you?
Yeah, because they were always full of sand.
Horrendous. But I'd forgotten about this experience, and I was sort of an adult at home watching a morning program when I saw a lady come on. She was talking about angels, and I suddenly had this flashback, and this whole memory came back to me. And I suddenly thought, I wonder if what this lady's talking about. She was talking about an angel experience that she'd had of her own. I thought, I wonder if that's what happened to me. And I sort of went out and bought her book and loads and loads of other books and became almost obsessed with reading about the subject. Obsessed is a good word. And fascinated, really, trying to find out what is an angel, what's this all about. And what I discovered initially were lots and lots of books written by very new age type of people. And although they were fascinating, it didn't really mean a lot to me. I was just sort of a British middle-aged housewife with two small children. And I wanted, I don't know, I suppose what I was looking for is somebody who was five and nearly drowned in on holiday. I think that's what I was looking
for. Which, of course, you were never going to find, which maybe you had to do something yourself. But I'll tell you something, a lot of these books, I think angels is the one field of all the fields that that I look into. I've looked at a lot of these books. I haven't bought them all. Some of them are very thin books and the print is very spaced out. And then every so often they'll have a little mantra to say. And they look very contrived and they don't actually tell you very much at the end of the day.
No. And what I wanted to read was I wanted to read people's experiences. That's what I wanted to read. And so I remember I'd read loads of these books. As you say, some of them are a little bit quicker than others. And I think it was one of my sisters who turned around and said to me, Jackie, you really ought to be writing a book because you know so much about the subject now. And I thought, ooh, you know, maybe I will. And perhaps because I was a little naive, I'm sure that helped. I thought, yes, I'll write a book. And I set up a website, which was in the very, very early stages of the internet. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I mean, this website was completely rubbish. But people were very kind and they still wrote to me, even though I got a rubbish website. And I started to receive letters from all over the world from people who'd had experiences about angels, people who'd had encounters that they described as visits from angels. And right from the beginning, I said, this is, you know, fascinating. You know, I believe you, because a lot of people were saying, I've never told anybody this before. Or they'd say, you won't believe me, but. But of course, all of these stories were becoming very familiar to me. I'd started to see patterns in what was happening.
All right, well, is there a typical angel story then? Typical angelic intervention?
Not a typical angel experience, but there are many similarities. There are lots of groups of experiences. So a typical angel experience might be somebody who's all alone, a woman, say, for example, who's on a country road, it's late at night, her phone stopped working, there's a problem with her tyre. And she gets out of the car in a panic, doesn't know what to do, and maybe a couple happen to drive by. There's always another woman there, so she doesn't feel afraid. And the woman sort of says, well, would you like to borrow my phone? And then the man says, don't worry, I'll sort out the tyre. And sort of, you know, within seconds, the tyre's fixed and she's on her way. And then she thinks, oh, I haven't thanked them, and turns around and they've kind of disappeared into the night. And then she thinks, well, you know, I didn't have a spare tyre. Where did they get the tyre from? Well, whatever. There's always sort of these things where you think, well, how did that happen? So that's a sort of typical angel experience.
Well, I've got people who will email me to say, I'll tell you how that happened. It was all luck and it was all coincidence.
Sure. But then there are other experiences, like one of my favourites, where a lady during the war years, during the blackout, no lights on, and she had to make her way to the train station. She was given directions and found or sort of encountered these big white gates, which she walked through and thought, right, it must be here. Walked through the gates, immediately found herself actually on the train track, realised there was a train coming towards her and was paralysed with fear, couldn't move, and thought, I'm going to get run over. She couldn't move, she was so frightened. And suddenly found a giant pair of arms lifting her up and out of the way onto the platform. And she said there was nobody there, but she felt these arms. I mean, even with human arms, it would be very difficult to lift somebody up off the train track, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, and you do hear stories like this, don't you, though? Every so often there'll be a disaster somewhere. Very often not in the UK or in the US, but perhaps in some far-flung part of the world. And you will hear miraculous stories of people who say, well, I should really have died in that particular plane catastrophe or train wreck or whatever it was, but something stopped that from happening.
Yeah, or there is these mysterious strangers, as I say, that appear. And do you know, I had an interesting one, which was a sort of a roadside one, as we were on that subject, where there were three people in the car, and then afterwards they each described the one person who'd come to help them in completely different ways. One had said it was a tall man with piercing blue eyes and blonde hair, and you said, no, no, it was a, you know, a shorter man with dark hair.
So were they trying to tell you that actually the story there is that everybody has a different guardian angel, and all those guardian angels went to help each of the people, if you see
what
I'm saying?
Yeah, well, possibly. Either that, or there's some sort of being who showed itself to the people in each in a different way. Maybe to give them the clue that there was something unusual there. And, they're all very different. And I mean, lots of people have experiences in the car. People will hear a voice. Sometimes it's a voice that they recognise. So it might be their deceased grandma who tells them to slow down. And then, they just narrowly avoid an accident or something. So there are many, many different types of experience. Some which we can explain, and others which really were very difficult to explain away.
I'll tell you a story, and there are going to be people who will probably call me a nut for this experience, but frankly, I'm big enough and old enough not to care particularly about that. I've had it said enough. So I was on the M25 motorway highway in the UK last week, and I was on my way back from a little bit of work that I'd done, and I won't say it was a voice, you know, I'm not hearing voices, but something said to me, turn off here and go home that way. If you continue on the M25 to go home, there's going to be a problem and you are going to be delayed. And I thought, okay, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
And I laughed a little and I thought to myself, okay, I'm deliberately not going to do that, and I'm going to see if there is some kind of delay. And whatever it was said to me, if we can say it spoke to me, it didn't actually speak, but the message came to me, that's okay. I know you want to prove this thing. The delay that you're going to experience is not very serious, but go ahead. You know, make my day. So I did. I carried on. Go ahead. Make my day. I went ahead and I got caught as I got closer to Heathrow Airport, the big airport here, in a huge traffic jam. And I don't know what did that. Was that my guardian angel doing that for me?
Well, some people are going to call it a sixth sense, or they're going to call it an intuition. You don't have to. If you don't feel comfortable with calling it a guardian angel, I don't think that matters. I think what is important here is that certainly I've discovered that there are millions of people the world over who are having these unexplained things happen.
Good word,
to them.
Jackie. We like that word.
Yeah. sometimes it's dramatic. As I said, other times it's just very, very subtle. I mean, I had one myself where I was driving to my sister's house late one night, and I got I was driving in a big four-wheel drive vehicle, and it was my husband's company car. So I was being very, very careful with this thing. And to get to my sister's house, I had to drive over a Bailey Bridge, a one-way bridge with traffic lights at either side. And as I came up to this bridge, this voice in my head, it was very loud and very insistent, saying, pull over. And I kind of was arguing and went, no way, because if I pull over, I'm going to scratch the car in the hedge. But this voice was very insistent, pull over now. So I thought, okay, this voice was so insistent, I really had to follow the instruction that I was given. And so I pulled over into the hedge, all the time cursing that I would be scratching the vehicle. And just as I did so, a white van came over the bridge at speed against the traffic lights and actually clipped my wing mirror, and I made ever such a loud noise, and I screamed out, because I think as it sort of flipped back, it did smash the glass. I mean, I was really quite frightened and looked back, and this van just disappeared off into the distance, and I sat there shaking for a second and thought, if I'd have been a fraction over into the road, it would have hit me head on. As it was, it just clipped my mirror. I hadn't realised that it hadn't done any damage because it had made such a lot of noise. I just drove on very carefully to my sister's house, and when I got there, we got out, and she said, oh, what on earth's the matter? And I explained to her what had happened, and we searched all the way round, but I mean, there was no scratch in the car. I hadn't even scratched the car in the hedge. But clearly something there had happened.
And you acted on advice.
Yeah, but yeah. You know, I actually had no choice. It was so insistent. I felt I had to go through with it. And people do say that sometimes. We should have choice. I mean, that's the point, is we do have freedom of choice. But this was so insistent, I felt that I had to follow it through, and thank goodness.
Well, do you not think that maybe you were just sort of tapping into what some people call the collective unconscious, and you were tapping into something that was going to happen in another plane, on another dimension, had happened already, and you were just getting the backwash from it?
Yeah, I mean, I would never discount any explanation, because I think we have to be open to all possibilities, and you know, Howard, as many of your listeners will, that there is so much we still don't understand. I think what is sensible is that we need to be prepared now to listen to what's happening, to be aware that science hasn't caught up. Science can't explain everything that's happening to people, but it doesn't mean that these experiences aren't very, very real, because they absolutely are.
But the thing that keeps me thinking at nights is the thought that all these things that I talk about, from near-death experiences to ESP to remote viewing to da-da-da-da-da, the whole panoply of the things that we talk about here on The Unexplained, are they all different things, or are they all different names and explanations that we give for the same thing? And if it is all the same thing, what's the same thing?
Yeah, I think that as a race, that there are changes that are happening around us, and I think that we are becoming more aware of the other realms, of the other dimensions that are around us. And I think we are starting to tap in more and more to that. And more people are aware of the fact that these things exist, that these things are real, and are talking about them.
Well, I know people who say that they channel so-called beings of light, and these beings of light, very intelligent ascended masters, as they call them, are now constantly giving warnings about problems that are going to be coming to the entire human race, catastrophes that will, as they say it, harvest souls, kill a lot of people, basically. But they're also talking about special children being sent here to help us through, and perhaps an alien intelligence coming down to help us after all these multiple calamities that are going to hit us. So, you know, there's a lot of this stuff going on.
There is, isn't it? And I think for many people, they find it very, very frightening, but I think it's helpful to read and find out as much about it as you can.
But once you've done that, Jackie, and I've asked other people this, when you've done that, what do you do if you buy into the whole idea? And I'm not sure what I buy into yet, but if you buy into the whole notion that things are changing and we have to be prepared for something, how do you prepare?
Yeah, scary, isn't it? I mean, some people will tell you there's nothing you can do. I mean, I don't believe that completely. I think that knowledge is power. I think knowledge is going to help us a lot. I do believe that there are intelligent races out there who are helping us. And, I mean, there's a lot of information on the internet, and very varied, some of it very frightening. But I personally believe, from the research that I've done, that if we get to the stage where whatever the disaster is happened, we blow ourselves up or what have you, I believe that we will be assisted either as human bodies with souls, or perhaps if we can't take our bodies with us, that we can take our souls with us, that will be lifted, that will be taken, and I think and helped, moved away from whatever the disaster is. That's my belief.
Is that all of us who'll be helped, or is that just the ones who've come to enlightenment and understanding?
This is a difficult one, isn't it? That as when we leave our physical bodies and we move into the heavenly realms as a natural part of a circle of life and death, that we are attracted to and end up in the area where our vibration, our spirit vibration, is attracted to, because like attracts like. I believe that maybe with the earth where we all are now, there are many different levels of human beings here right now, some more enlightened than others. There are always going to be pockets of people who are, say, warmongers, for example. And I think that when the time comes, if they are not, let's say, aware or enlightened, that maybe they're not going to be able to, purely from a scientific point of view, be taken to these higher places of higher consciousness.
So it's not going to be a case that they have not accepted the doctrine, they haven't bought into the philosophy, it's just that they haven't learned the necessary skills to
possibly
escape.
Yeah, but I don't believe that energy is ever destroyed anyway, and I think that they'll be taken care of in a different way. It's just that I don't believe we'll all go to the same place at the same time.
Okay, before we get on to the fascinating book that you've written that isn't going to be out for a few months yet, Angel Kids, I don't think we've fully explained yet what you believe angels are. Are they our deceased relatives coming back to help us? Are they beings of light? Are they aliens? What are they?
This is what really excited me, because when I first started to investigate phenomena, the angel phenomena, and I started to get these stories from all over the world. People were describing different types of beings, different types of encounters. And it was after some time that I realized that what they were describing was very many different types of things. So what I discovered was that there were angels in the traditional sense, so the type of angels that you might be familiar with in the Bible, for example, and many different religions talk about beings of light, light beings. So, or others would, other people would call them God's messengers. And so that would be one type of being that, that people would encounter, literally a light being, nothing to do with human souls. And the other thing that people were regularly seeing, hearing, feeling and encountering were deceased loved ones. So this was where you might hear grandma's voice in the car giving you the warning. And so loved ones that you've lost who are familiar to you, who are coming back and sort of, you know, keeping an eye on things. And people would call them their guardian angels. So they're not angels in the traditional sense, but, you know, do I believe that these deceased souls are coming back to help and keeping an eye on things here? Absolutely, because I have thousands and thousands of case histories.
So
that I'm certainly convinced by.
What we've called angels in the past and what we think might be angels could be a number of things, yeah. Not just one.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a good little blanket term. So all these little pocket guidebooks that you can buy in fancy goods stores, I don't know if they still call them fancy goods stores, that probably dates me terribly, are not really on the mark here. At all.
No, I mean, I started off investigating the traditional angel phenomena, the traditional tier of angels, the guardian angels, you know, the virtues, the principles, all the different levels where, you know, we as humans sort of classified the different angels, and we'd listed all the different angels, like Angel Gabriel, Angel Michael, for example, are very familiar names. But I think that's just the tip of the iceberg, really, and is almost not relevant in so much as, with all of these cases, if you want help from these higher beings, that you there is a sort of a universal law whereby they are not allowed to interfere. So the most important thing that we need to remember is to ask for assistance, give them permission to intervene with our difficulties, with our problems, certainly in emergency situations. And this is when some of the most dramatic experiences occur, when people are in dangerous situations, they've been in an accident, they're falling off a mountain or something, and suddenly find themselves dramatically back on the top with no top of the mountain with no explanation.
Hang on, so you're saying to me that these people have had time to call on their guardian angel to help them as they're falling down the mountain?
Some people are just saying help.
And that's enough?
Yeah, because what you're doing is you're giving permission to these higher beings, or God, if you like. A lot of people believe that you certainly shouldn't ask angels for help, that you should go directly for God. I mean, I don't think that really matters. If whatever you feel is right, as long as you're asking for sort of this higher assistance. If you call out help in an emergency situation, many of the more dramatic experiences that people have written to me about have occurred during these moments of great trauma where somebody just yells help.
What about the power of positive thinking? Because we're told an awful lot about that, and a lot of people have made a lot of money with books and DVDs and various things about positive thinking. And there is some evidence that it works. You know, I went into the last...
evidence. Yeah, definitely. I mean, we absolutely have the power over our own life situations. And in many cases where people are saying, well, you know, how come I'm so broke? Well, it's because we've put ourselves into that situation. And what about, you know, the fact that, you know, I absolutely hate my job. You know, well, why are you there then? You know, move on, look for something new. And I do believe definitely that we have great say over our lives and that we can attract into our lives the things that we want to do.
So do you think if you take one step in the right direction, you will get the help to take the other steps? But it is that first difficult step in the right direction that is the hard one.
Do you know what, Howard? I think the most difficult thing for us as human beings is fear of failure. And so many people are so frightened to go out and do what they want to do in their lives, or they want to do with their life. They're so frightened of failure that they don't take the first step. And I sympathize with that. That's, you know, been there, done that. I mean, I often do something that scares me every single day. I put myself out of my comfort zone. It's a really hard thing to do, but I make myself do it because I think it's the only way that we can move ourselves forward. Because if you keep doing the same things that you've always done, you're going to keep getting the same results that you've always got.
You have to keep challenging yourself.
You do, and it's not easy.
Even in this strange broadcasting career that I've had, I always used to, I was lucky, you know, do different things, get different gigs, and I can remember the first time I had to do something for a TV show. I think it, what was it? It was Silla's Moment of Truth. It was a big entertainment show in the UK, and I was the voice of that show. And I had never done anything like that. I'm a news journalist, and I just happened to luck into that gig, and I thought, what am I doing here? This is an actor's job. And I don't know, I just thought, okay, Howard, now this is ridiculous. This is fun. And if you get this right, you are going to learn from it.
Yeah.
So you have to grasp these challenges and walk forward with them, because inevitably, they will take you forward. They may not take you forward in a straight line, they might take you forward in a zigzaggy line, but you'll get there.
Yeah, you're right, Howard. You know, it is frightening to go out and do new things. Especially, I think what is very sad is that you always find people, and certainly in the past more so, you know, they're sort of lying on the deathbed and they're saying, you know, I wish I'd become a dancer. I wish I'd gone out and, you know, become a professional footballer instead of going into the bank like my father wanted me to do. These life regrets, it's very, very sad. And I feel like everybody should sit down and write a great big list of everything they want to do and start going through and ticking them off, because you're not going to succeed at everything, but there might be part of your goal that you're able to accomplish. And you will fail on the way.
Well, it's true.
You know, it doesn't matter. You know, keep taking another step forward. Try something new. Try a different approach. You know, every failure is one more step towards your goal. Just
I wish I could remember who the famous American was, and I don't know who it was, but it was a president or somebody in America. Somebody will email me and tell me, who said, failing is not going down, failing is staying down. That's a great motto that we can all keep. It is. But
yeah,
this is Philosophy of Life, and this is not to do with the new book, which is Angel Kids. Now, it's interesting that you have now come out with this, because I have had some contact with these people who do channeling over this last year or two, and they've been telling me about all this catastrophe stuff that is possibly going to happen to us and how a lot of people are going to die and all the rest of it, da-da-da-da-da. But they've also said, and there are some very special children being born at the moment who will help this planet.
Absolutely. Do you know, Howard, I never intended to write about children with psychic experiences and whose lives are surrounded by paranormal phenomena. I had never intended to do that. I just sort of fell into it, and I fell into it because as a result of people sending me their angel and miracle type of stories, I started to receive these stories about children with psychic ability. And it just, you know, I kind of started shoving these stories to one side and, you know, gathering them together. And I had more and more and more. And I absolutely am convinced it's not all a coincidence. I have so many stories from all over the world, people of different types of religious backgrounds and so on. People who have children at the moment who are born with dramatic paranormal powers. Powers is a fairly good word. I mean, there are children who are clearly mind-reading those around them. They are able to pick upon the thoughts of others. There are children who have the ability to communicate with deceased family relatives and higher beings and are able to pass on messages. Very young children, really, from as soon as they can speak, they're able to sort of pass on messages from the deceased, or they're chatting to grandparents at night time or when they're on their own. These children have what we would traditionally have called invisible friends. But these invisible friends are able to tell parents and friends, family friends and so on around them. And they're able to give information about things that the young child had no way of knowing.
But haven't children always exhibited these things? I remember at 3 years of age, I used to go around telling people that I was an American and that I'd lived before in California. Well, I went to California a few years ago, and I actually saw places that I'd never seen before, but I recognised. So haven't children always brought with them something?
I think we have always had children with these abilities. And what you tend to find very often is that these children who are being born often into families who have had these types of experiences previously. So it is a generation thing. And so, I mean, we've always had that, but I believe now more than ever that we have children on the planet who are being born from outside of our universe, from different dimensions, who are more advanced souls than many who are here at the moment, who have come to assist us during this difficult transitional stage. Whatever's happening next, they've come to help us. And many of these very young children know. They know why they're here. They know they've come to help. And again, from the sort of very earliest stages, as soon as they're able to speak, they start talking about why they're here. They're very wise, they're very intelligent. They know that they're here to help.
Well, God, if you're a parent, and I have seen some television recently about parents who believe they have very special children with very special powers, isn't that a hard one? If I was a dad and I had a child who started to say things like this, well, the first thing that would enter my head is not, let's develop the psychic abilities of this child. My first instinct would be, as a dad, I want to make sure that you have an ordinary childhood.
Absolutely.
And have a chance to be an innocent child and learn your lessons as you go on like any other child. I don't want to do what people do when they're trying to develop performers, you know, push them hard onto the stage and then we see what happens. That would be my view.
Yeah, and many of the people that communicate with me don't like to talk about it outside the family, or people are frightened, even frightened of the ability that their child show, or if they're not frightened themselves, there are family members who are frightened, or people, I mean, one lady, for example, was telling me that she has, her family are very divided, and that half the family think it's brilliant, and the other half stay away because they think there's something spooky going on. And so it's difficult, and sort of most of the families that I've encountered don't want people to know about what's happening because they don't want their children tested. They don't want people investigating or trying to find out what's happening with the children. They're very protective of it. So in many of the cases, I've used just first names in the book, or we've changed the name completely because the family want to protect the child.
Give me a case story. Give me a case study. A good one.
Gosh, there are... Do you know, there are so many. I mean, one mum in particular, she was communicated for a very long time, and she has great difficulty because her child has what we would call things like learning disorders. She has any number of different disorders, difficult in so much as they are, you know, antisocial behaviour and so on. And yet she still has all these very paranormal abilities, and she picks out whole sentences from her mother's mind, and she says the difficulty is she's sort of, musing as we do. You sort of sat there thinking about something, and her daughter will come and join in the conversation when she hasn't said anything. And she said, you can't tell the child one thing and think another, because the child will, she can hear what her mother's thinking constantly. And she said it's difficult when you want some privacy, or you're thinking of sort of more personal, intimate things, and you don't really want to discuss your personal relationships.
My
with your
God,
child.
It's like having a spy in your home, isn't it?
And there's a lot of kids who have this ability, some stronger than others. So, I mean, that's one of the more challenging ones.
But do you think, Jackie, that maybe we are all born with these things, but the process of living in this world turns off the switches? In other words, we all have perception when we come into this world. We all know things. There's a famous story, and it might be apocryphal, it may not be true at all, about the little baby who could turn tennis balls inside out simply by ceasing to believe in them.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, there are many such cases. I mean, I find that a lot of these stories come from parents with very, very young children. I mean, there's one little boy who was watching a television program, and it was a sort of a show where they were training dogs, and the lady was talking to a dog who just happened to have the same name as this little boy, and she kept shouting at this dog, and the little boy was in a playpen in the room with the television on, and sort of pointed to the television and shouted no, because he was getting very angry with this woman shouting at the dog with the same name. And the television flicked off, and she said the mother knew exactly what had happened, that little boy had pointed to the TV and he'd made the television switch off just by pointing to it. And she said, I looked at him and said, turn it back on, please. And she said after a few moments, he sort of was very sulky and just turned around, flicked his hand back at the television, and the television came back on again. There's another one where a little girl, every time she gets angry, all the electrical things around the house sort of start going haywire. And she said they were having a row the one day, and she said the little girl was stood by the switch for the garage, the automatic garage lift-up. And she said, and that started to raise as soon as she shouted. And then she said, I told her again, you know, to put that down, put that back down again. And the child just seemed to have the ability to manipulate the electricity around them just by thoughts alone. I mean, bizarre. It almost sounds unbelievable, ridiculous. And I think that's why it's so real. I mean, these parents have nothing to gain by telling me these things. I don't pay them to share their stories with me. Often we don't use their names. They're often embarrassed about the things that happen. One little girl was in a church school and her mother'd gone to pick her up, and the little girl suddenly turned around and got very excited and said, oh, look, Mum, there's Nana. And was sort of had seen her deceased grandmother in the room. And, of course, it's very embarrassing in this church school. It wasn't a belief that they had. And the little girl, you know, sort of wouldn't let up and was so just excited about seeing her deceased grandmother. And so a lot of times parents are embarrassed by what they see and experience around them. You know, it's not something that they want to happen.
Well, because we all have a duty to protect the value of childhood, which is under threat from so many sources these days, the media and popular culture and all the rest of it, there's nothing much we can do about this, is there? Because we need to protect the children's anonymity, and I agree with those parents. I don't think it's a good idea to put small children through psychometric, psychological, whatever testing that they would do.
No. I mean, some of the more dramatic things that I have come across, I know if somebody was able to collect all of these stories together and put them on a TV program and interview the children, it would make dramatic TV, I can tell you. But of course, that's not going to happen because these children need to be protected. And, you know, I found it very difficult. I've come a very long way since I started the work that I'd done. That here I was, and say, they're just sort of, you know, middle-aged British mum of two small children investigating paranormal experiences, in which I wanted to write about these things in a very normal, down-to-earth way. And then I've encountered all of these things, and I really see the world very differently from how I did when I first started.
But I don't want to be too cynical about it or too sceptical about it. All parents believe that their children are special.
Sure.
Don't they?
Yeah.
And, you know, parents believe that their children are special in many different ways. They think maybe they're performers, they're singers and speakers or tap dancers, or might have great psychic abilities or powers to save the planet or whatever. Now, what's the first thing those people might do? Well, if they read books like the ones that you write, the first thing that they're going to do is say, my child is very special. Who can I talk to about this? I'll email Jackie Newcomb. True, isn't it? That is what may happen.
What tends to happen is mums and dads are looking for some help, and when they kind of fall across my website, and it's just a one section of many things that I've researched, they are desperately searching for something to explain the types of experience that they're having. And I think particularly with the mediumship, with so many children who seem to be able to communicate with, and it starts off with deceased relatives, and then it ends up being all sorts of beings. And what's happening, Howard, is that, you know, where you start off and you think, oh, isn't it sweet, they've got, you know, a little invisible friend. And then they find out that there is, you know, that the various things come about whereby the parents are saying, oh, my goodness, this is real. This isn't just a sort of a, this isn't make-believe. This is something that real that's happening. And it's the proof that's behind that. I mean, I don't want to give too much away and sort of give you all the best stories, because, of course, I want you to read the book when it comes out. But, I mean, parents are looking for help, and that was a very important section of the book. I mean, a lot of my books, what is important to me is don't just talk about your theories, prove it. And so what I do is I share loads and loads of real stories, real case histories from real people. That was the most important thing to me. And this is what I found difficulty in finding when I first started. It's interesting to read about people's theories. Well, give me an example then. That's what I wanted. Give me an example.
So what we need is a support group for these parents where they can anonymously help each other.
Well, I've actually set something up, and it's been going for a while. I do have a forum on the internet called Psychic Children. So if people have children with these abilities and they want to chat to other parents, they can join. It's free, It's a Yahoo group, and they can join just do a search on the internet on Psychic Children, or you can just join via a link on my website. And so, I mean, what happens is that the parents, it's usually parents, sometimes it's the grandparents, sometimes it's brothers, older brothers and sisters of these children, and very occasionally children themselves, older children themselves, just want to chat to others who are having the same types of experiences that they are. And what I've been able to do over the time that I was researching the book, and which was certainly a long time, actually several years I've been doing this, because I wanted to get enough material together before I got the book out there, was I've managed to find ways of helping with some of the difficulties that occur. So the sorts of things are that children being woken up at night time by beings or spirits waking them up, keeping them tired because they've got school the next day. And so those are the sort of difficulties that family members are having.
Well, that's a hell of a difficulty. If a child has a problem at school or has a problem with, I don't know, a broken toy or something that's worrying the child, as a parent, you can fix that. You can go and see the school, you can buy them a new toy, you can comfort them. If a child is being woken up by strange beings in the middle of the night giving them important messages, what on earth can you do about that?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's happening an awful lot. And so I've sort of been able to come up with loads of solutions, lots of them tried and tested by the parents, some of them suggested by the parents.
Oh, all right. Well, what do you tell the child as a parent who is having these problems? What do you go and say? You go up into the bedroom and say, well, don't worry, it's only the beings of light trying to steer you in the right direction? Or do you say, go back to sleep, darling, it's only a nightmare? Or what do you do?
I mean, I had that as a child, actually. I mean, I used to wake up night after night after night, and I used to see something in my room, someone in my room. And I had that myself, and I had that for years. That was the exact phrase that my mum used, go back to sleep, you're having a nightmare. So it clearly didn't work with me. I mean, every time I saw something, it became my nightmare, so it created fear. And you don't always need to be frightened of these things. I think it's important to empower the child. That's very important.
You still grew up to do what you're doing now, so being told that it was just a nightmare and having it brushed under the carpet and not amplified and played up didn't do you any harm, so maybe that is the way to deal with
I'm
it.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, I found great difficulty. I suffered a lot from stress. I suffered from depression even. What helped me was learning about the phenomena and having an understanding of what was going on. And certainly knowledge was power. I mean, you can't give loads of knowledge to a very young children, but of course, a lot of the time they know what's going on now. You know, it's not so vague for them as it was for me, for example. They actually know who's visiting and why they're there. So they're not always frightened, but it's the disruptive element that needs to be challenged. So the things that we find useful are asking the child or giving the child permission to tell these beings that it's not appropriate for them to be there at that time because they can't, it's not a convenient time for them to communicate. Because I'm sure, as people will say, that, you know, that time isn't the same for them as it is for us. They don't understand the child has to go to school.
So they don't know in their time zone it's actually 3 o'clock in the morning in Staffordshire. And do the beings listen if you say, look, do me a favour, by all means come and tell me these important messages, but please do it when I'm awake?
Yeah, sometimes. Certainly that works with human type of spirits, that you ask them to go away and come back at a more appropriate time. So we tend to get the children to say, come back on Saturday morning, you know, or come back when it's a more convenient time. I think it's important that you let the children talk about the experiences. It doesn't matter whether you believe them or not. That's almost not relevant, that you let the children talk about what they are experiencing. They need to know that the parent is in charge. They need to know that the parent is not frightened by the experience. Sometimes if it's relatives that are coming to visit, for example, I think it can be fun. It can be exciting. The parents can often get messages from the child, but just needs to treat it as if it's fairly normal. Oh, you know, all an exciting adventure. So you could say something like, you know, oh, how wonderful that Grandma comes to visit you still. Aren't you lucky that you can see her? So if the child knows that you're not frightened, that you're in charge, that you're playing your role as an adult, that's your job, that your job is to protect the child. If the child knows that you're not frightened by it, often again, it's no longer a problem.
Well, here's a problem that may arise, I'm sure has arisen. You know, your child goes to a party at its best friend's house with its mum and dad and all the relatives there from that other family and says, oh yes, mummy knows that I see things that appear in the night and has told me it's perfectly all right that I'm talking to grandma who died 5 years ago. That's a situation, isn't it?
You know, not as much as you would think, because more and more people are interested in this phenomena and becoming aware and are interested in it. So in some areas, that's not such a problem. But oftentimes what you'll find is that the child's friends are also going through the same types of experiences. So these children don't come in isolation. They come in groups, and they either have brothers and sisters or their closest friends at school are often part of the same group. They're here at the same time, and they're having the same experience.
So there's a network. Has this got anything to do with the phenomenon that seems to be bigger in America than it is in the UK of indigo children?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they call them different names for different waves of children. Indigos were the first wave of children that came through, and so-called they were called because of their auras, their energy fields were seen as indigo-coloured. The next wave of children were called the crystal children, because apparently of their crystalline structure, whatever that means, some technical term, I'm sure. And the next wave were called rainbow children. I don't classify them specifically. I do mention the different levels in my books. And I think it's just a kind of a blending from one level to next. I think that the indigo children were called the first wave. They were the sort of the scouts, if you will, who were sort of coming to sort of, you know, try out the human bodies and test us out and so on. And I think the latest children are a much sort of purer form. They're coming a little more capable of manipulating their human body, their vessel, in a way that's more beneficial, so that they seem to be better able to cope with coming here to help us. So,
are you worried that with the book that you've written that's going to be out in a couple of months, that you're opening a whole can of worms here? I was at a channeling just as an observer a little while ago, and the person doing the channeling was saying something along the lines of, there are very special children who are coming to Earth now, and we have to ask them for guidance, and we have to help them. Well, I thought to myself, well, actually, if you're a third party and the child that you think has these powers is nothing to do with you, that is absolutely none of your business.
Yeah, and I think we have to be very careful. And all the way through the book, this, you know, I've stressed this, that it's the parents have to come first. It's always about what the parent feels is the best for the child. And what I've tried to do in the book is I've tried to offer suggestions which have come from other parents in the same situation, certainly for some of the difficulties that the children are encountering because of these, because of the paranormal phenomena that they're experiencing. But it's always a judgment call, because not every experience is going to be psychic or paranormal, clearly. And so, you know, it's important that the parents are aware, if they believe that their child's experiencing these different types of phenomena. It's important that they are aware of what this means. Important they're aware of other people who are going through the same thing as they are.
And it has to be important, bearing in mind what we've just said, that parents fend off people who believe that they are, you know, wannabe psychic investigators who might be interested in this, because it is, as we said, nothing to do with them.
I agree, and I think it's important that they are protected as much as possible, because they're certainly not here to be probed and poked. That's not what this is about. But these children are not like other children. They are wise beyond their years. And you can talk to a seven-year-old and it's like talking to a very wise old man, an old shaman or something. These children seem to know things. They seem to have an understanding of what it's like to be a loving, caring human being that many of us don't understand, that many of us don't get. They are wise beyond their years. They are different. You don't feel as if you're talking to a normal child. Even toddlers often just come out with these amazing statements about the world and you know, just the planet as a whole, animals here and so on. They're very sensitive. They just know things that we don't know, and they say things that, you know, the parents are saying, where did they get that from? Where does that come from? And certainly young children who haven't been exposed to you know, anything outside of the family, very young children, How do they know these things?
So if some of these children are here with a task to help us get through whatever catastrophes are coming, or to help the planet generally, whatever the task might be, in what time frame are we going to know what they're here to do? Are we going to know by the time they grow up into their 20s and 30s, that's the point of why they're here?
Well, you know, as I'm sure you've heard before, many people are sort of talking of the, you know, the 2012 time frame, the Mayan calendar cut-off date. But, I mean, I don't think it's as simple as that. And I also don't feel that as many people will say, the doom-mongers, as you call them, that there is nothing that we can do. I don't believe that there's nothing that we can do, and I don't believe that the future is totally set in stone. And I feel that the whole point of the reason that they're here is because that we can still make changes. And I think those changes are related to how we're treating the planet, how we're polluting the planet, how we're living our lives, how we're treating each other. And I think that with these children's influence, that we can make big changes in how we live that will prevent some of these disasters from happening. I don't think that the end is nigh. I think the end isn't inevitable.
You know, in the news business, which has been most of my career, but not all of it, I know a lot of people who don't believe in any of this and think all there is what you can see. Well, that's their view, and, you know, I'm quite happy with that. The only thing I would say to them,
Howard, I would say to these people, seriously, have you investigated any of this material whatsoever? Because often you'll find when people say, this is all a load of rubbish, none of this exists, you're all mad. Then I would say, you know, hey, get out there, read some stuff, investigate the phenomena, because it's the people that don't know anything about the subject that will say it's not real.
True enough, and I think the one thing that will change most people's minds, and I've seen this happen, is when something happens to them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But also, I was a few days ago at Stonehenge. Something told me to just go to Stonehenge because it was a lovely, beautiful, sunny day, and I thought, I don't want to be stuck in London. I want to go to the country, and I think I'll go down to Wiltshire. And I went to Stonehenge and walked around Stonehenge with the crowds, and I've only ever been there once before, but I looked at those stones and I thought, we don't really know what they were here for. No. And how on earth did they do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is what the point I'm getting to here is, if you want proof that we don't know everything, go and look at Stonehenge.
There's so much that we don't understand. I mean, we are limited by what we can see, hear and feel in our human bodies, which have very limited capacity to perceive things. Very, very limited indeed. I mean, even we know other sort of animals on our planet, for example, dogs, you know, we can't hear the silent dog whistles that you can buy for dogs, but the dogs can hear them. So just because we can't hear the sound doesn't mean that the sound doesn't exist, because even dogs can hear them. Even my cats have a better sense of hearing than I do.
Do you know, Galtier, this is so funny. I was about to tell you my cat story, as you said.
Now, I must be psychic, Howard.
Here's my cat story. There is a cat who lives in the apartment complex that I'm living in. And I've known this cat for a while, and sometimes it's very, very shy, and mostly it won't come up to you. Well, lately it's been coming up to me, and it's hanging around my car an awful lot. It sits on my car. There are lots of cars in the car park. It sits on my car. I can see its paw prints on my bonnet and on my windscreen, okay? Yesterday, I saw this cat, and I had a bag full of shopping. And the cat started walking around the bag full of shopping, and I said, oh, hello, there's nothing for a cat in there. There's no fish or anything in there. It's just the newspapers and, you know, a bottle of water. I'm sorry. And he walked round me, and as I was going to bed last night, this cat that's shown an increasing interest in me and my car for some reason, this cat was in the fluorescent light of outside, because the car park is lit. Here in London, car parks have to be lit because people steal cars. And this cat is sitting like a porcelain figurine of a cat right in front of my car, looking at me. What's that all about, Jackie?
You know, cats are very magical, aren't they? The Egyptians used to worship cats as gods, didn't they? And they had a cat god called Bast. My cats, I have two, and I started dreaming about these cats, but both I had them both at different times. I started dreaming about the cats before I had them, and sort of felt obsessed, drawn to go and get these cats, both rescue cats. And when I'm writing my books, when I'm writing my articles, they come and sit in the conservatory, which I call my office at home. And they're either in the chair in the room with me, or they'll very often sit right on the desk, sometimes one each side when I'm working. It's quite strange. It's almost as if they have a higher purpose. You know, hey, maybe they're channeling too, Howard. Who knows? I don't know what it's about, but there's something increasingly
I never
strange.
Thought of myself particularly as a cat person, but something, I don't know, something's going on. Jackie, the book Angel Kids.
Yes.
Details.
Well, I've collected... As I do, loads and loads and loads of real stories of these children from all over the world, because I think that's the most important thing. Put your money where your mouth is. So I'm not just saying, this is what's happening. Believe me, I'm saying, here are some real stories. Decide for yourself.
And when's it out and who publishes
it? Important thing. It's published by Hay House. It's out in October, at the end of October this year, 2008. And it's got lots of help in there for people who are having these experiences with their own children. Lots of tried and tested tips for people. So if you're having these problems, you certainly you'll feel as if you're not alone. But as with everything else, I've suggested that the parents are the ones that make the decisions. You read the book and then decide for yourself.
I'm going to get asked, will this book be available at the same time in North America and in Australia, New
You'll
Zealand?
You'll be able to buy it from the internet, absolutely. Okay. And people can get the book from my website if they want signed copies, which is www.angellady.co.uk. And they can buy signed copies, and we post that all over the world. So, yeah, you can get it everywhere.
You are the angel lady.
That's the way I started off. I'm now the afterlife communication lady, the psychic children lady.
The one-stop shop lady.
It's kind of grown. You know, I sort of fell into all these things. It's strange.
Oh, God.
I never intended to do all of this. That wasn't where my interests lie, but... Somebody has other ideas, I think.
Oh, God. Well, the very first psychic that I interviewed when how old was I? I was 22, I think, and I interviewed this very famous psychic who said, I was going to do so-and-so, but I was steered in a different direction. And I've heard that story over and over again since then. Jackie Newcombe, thank you very much. Jackie is the author of Angel Lady, which is published by Hay House. She's just given you the details. They will also be on my website, which is www.theunexplained.tv. Please email this show. Please hit that website. You can email me at unexplainedhh@yahoo.co.uk with any thoughts and suggestions about this show. Thank you very much for listening wherever in the world you are. And the number of countries joining the show grows all the time, and the number of cities. It is truly amazing. To me, it's still magic. Thank you to my webmaster, Graham Mullins, for his efforts. Thank you to Mart for the theme tune, and I look forward to hearing from you soon, Mart, about the new version. Very excited about that. And thank you to you for listening. My name is Howard Hughes in London. This is The Unexplained. We will return.